Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and today we're talking to Chris Burnham, one of the great artists on Batman Incorporated. Chris has been doing distinctive work for companies like Image and Marvel leading up to the Grant Morrison assignment. He'll tell us how he got the gig, and we'll talk about a lot of his past work with writers like Joe Casey, Richard Starking, and Tom DeFalco.
I can't believe, Burnham, that we've only talked once before, and it was on a convention floor, and this is your first, like, long Word Balloon. So thank you for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. I remember reading that Word Balloon, I don't know, mailer or your free handout thing that you were giving out at comic stores 3-4 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Hilarious.
Was it longer ago than that? I remember there was the Walt Simonson one and the Jeff Darrow one. That's when I first heard about you.
That's cool. Yeah, no, it was like 32 pages. It was like a full-size comic book. That was the idea. And, yeah, it was transcripts, little highlights of interviews that I had done in mostly in 2005 and 6, my first couple of years. And, then you're right, Simonson's in there, Jeff Darrow. It was great. I even got a little Jeff Darrow art, a little panel from Shaolin Monk. Or Shaolin Cowboy, rather.
Nice.
Which was kind of cool. So that's awesome. And, yeah, actually, I still got a couple thousand of them. I got to keep giving them away at conventions. So, but very cool. No, this is great, man. And congratulations on your Batman work. You started with Batman and Robin. But tell us how you first got the call from the Bat Office to jump in and start working on Batman.
It was wild. Average Wednesday afternoon or something, and I get an email from Joe Casey, my collaborator on Officer Down and Nixon's Pals, and he said, hey, are you available to do a couple pages in Grant's final issue on Batman and Robin? And this is like, well, no, but yes. And so I lied and said I was available, and the next day I was on the phone with Mike Marks at DC and got 5 pages of script, which quickly expanded to 7 pages. And after I was done with 3 of those, they offered me Batman Incorporated.
Fantastic. Now, at the time, as you say, you had just finished up Officer Down, and you had previously worked with Joe on Nixon Pals. And you were currently working, am I right, with Boom on Armory Wars?
Yes, I was working on the Armory Wars, so I had to blow my deadline on issue 6, I guess it was, to take on the Batman and Robin gig, which was a little dicey at one point.
Sure.
They weren't very happy with me. It was definitely, there's no way I was gonna turn down Batman and Robin. It was kind of a dick move on my part just to say, hey, I'm doing this. I'm going to be late. Sorry.
Well, it's the world of freelance. And I mean, sometimes that means, saying yes to one job and turning down another. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it ended up working out all right. We brought on, I don't know if you know Kyle Strom. Kyle Strom actually helped me out on pencils with that particular issue of Amory War. So we were able to hit the deadline-ish. And we might have been just a little bit late, but we basically, with Kyle's help, we worked it all out.
That's cool. That's excellent. No, and God, I'll tell you, man, that was it was great. I think you were used very seamlessly in that last issue of Batman and Robin from Grant. Was that 16?
16, yeah.
There you go. And man, now in Batman Incorporated, this is it's great because I had read the first couple issues and I even remember asking you when you really couldn't talk much about it. I'm like, all right, I've seen the Gaucho. I go, and just thinking of the different Batman agents that we had already seen possibly. And I'm like, are you working on the Gaucho? And you're kind of like, yeah. But it was great to suddenly finally see the issue come out. And not only do you have one Batwoman in there, Kate Kane, but also Kathy Kane. And I think there's some really interesting flashback sequences in this issue. And it looks like there's a slight difference between what you're doing modern age and the flashback scenes. Am I right?
A little bit. I think it's tough to say. A lot of it is Nathan Fairbairn, one of my best buddies in comics and one of the best colorists in comics. A lot of it is him treating the modern stuff, with a crazy computer coloring and the flashback stuff with the subtle Bendy dot stuff. There's certain things in the flashbacks that I was doing differently. Like when I was drawing Batman in the flashbacks, I gave him the, you know, the costume with the eyebrows on it, and the and I gave him the forehead shadows. Like, no matter where the light's coming from, he always has that shadow right in the middle of his forehead.
Sure.
So there were a couple things that I was handling differently, but I think for the most part, it's actually Nathan Fairbairn's work that's making it look old. I didn't feel really comfortable, you know, really, really going for the Silver Age stuff. I've got a fair amount of, you know, Silver Age comics and, you know, reprints of the old Batman stuff, and I just don't think I can. I'm not exactly J.H. Williams. I'm not a, you know, super chameleon, so I wasn't. I didn't think I'd be able to really pull that off and actually hit my deadline. So I did a couple tricks here and there, and then basically left it up to Nathan.
Well, Nathan did a great job then, because regardless, I do get that sense. It's interesting that you call that area, that it's a shadow of black over Batman's eyes, because I always thought that was just black that was part of the cowl, and that almost like the Adam West show, that it really was kind of a different color rather than being just an accent of shadow and everything. So
that's interesting. I don't know.
But also, and again, maybe it's Nathan's color palettes, but I remember telling you this when I saw you in person a couple days ago, that the flashback sequences themselves, they remind me of Dick Sprang, but also in particular, I have the DC Vault book, and there's a wonderful page in the DC Vault book that Dick Sprang did as a print in the 90s, and it's this great shot of the entire Batman universe, and it's that same color palette, and it just was... You know, I mean, it's clearly Dick Sprang, the artist that you know from, you know, if you know your 50s Batman reprints. He pretty much was the chief artist when it wasn't Shelley Moldoff or somebody else doing it. But, right. You know, it's that real kind of chunky-looking Batman. You know, I mean, he was still muscly, but he just had a little bit more substance to his body, I think, in the 50s compared to other ones. And, it just kind of evoked that 90s Dick Sprang rather than specifically 50s Dick Sprang. So, which is great. I mean, again, that's, you know, this is that era. And now you say you've read some old Batman reprint stuff. How much research did you do on some of these specific stories? Because in typical Grant fashion, he's really called upon a lot of moments of Kathy Kane's careers. And I certainly know, having a bunch of, you know, those 100-page super spectacular reprints that DC would put out, I've read a lot of these stories that he kind of alludes to.
Yeah, well, I've got the Black Case book. Reprint graphic novel thing that has a couple of Batwoman stories, and then DC was kind enough to send along the Prisoner of Three Worlds one, and
sure.
the first appearance of Batwoman, and maybe a couple others. And I've got a couple of her appearances when she was in Batman Family in the 70s. So I had all the appropriate reference on hand so that I could, you know, make everything look right. And also I ended up using, I think it was Batman 682, maybe a 681. It was in the Final Crisis tie-in with Batman when he's going through that really trippy dream sequence when he's possessed by the lump or whatever, and they're trying to build clones out of his memories or whatever the hell was happening. So there was a lot of stuff that was specifically called back to that issue, and I actually were using the specific the panel compositions and stuff to really hammer that home.
Very cool. Now, that's a great story, man. And, you know, I think it kind of reemphasizes the fact, because I remember last year Darwin Cook saying, oh, I don't like what they've done to Batwoman. They turned her into whatever. And it's like, no, this is a new character, man. And I think obviously this story cements it, that there are very distinctly two different Kathy and Kate Kanes, and therefore two different Batwomen.
Right.
So I'm glad to see this kind of fleshed out more. And again, all these nods, I mean, you know, Grant is doing these nods to when she was murdered. I remember when that happened in the early 70s. I think, I want to say Don Newton might have even been drawing Batman for that particular issue. It was a Bronze Tiger story. I remember he was in that story as well, as I recall.
Right. Yeah, she's killed pretty unceremoniously. really don't make too big a deal of it.
You know, it's funny because the same thing happened kind of with the Golden Age Batman as well. I've had that conversation with Paul Levitz. He killed off the Earth 2 Batman in a Justice Society story. And it really was this, like, nothing villain. And it, I mean, you know, it was a standoff, but really even Joe Staton did the art and everything. And artistically, it really wasn't the big moment like, you know, Gwen Stacy dying or any other major character dying. And you would think that it, especially being the Golden Age Batman, that they would have done it a little more ceremoniously. But even what Levitt says, he goes, yeah, I kind of regret that we didn't really make a bigger deal out of that when we first did it. So the funeral was a big deal, but the actual death was just kind of, you know.
Wow, that's really weird.
I don't know.
I've got to track that story down. That sounds wild.
It's in Adventure Comics, back when they were dollar comics.
Right.
So, yeah, that's that story. But, no, man, this is really cool, and I love the design of the Gaucho. I imagine – now I'm going to ask you some questions that obviously I don't want details, but just – in general terms, are you getting the opportunity to design more new Batman Incorporated agents, heroes that we haven't seen yet? Are you getting a chance to kind of just?
I will say yes. some of it is redesigned, some of it is new designs from whole cloth, and some of it is new characters with references to existing material. How about that?
Okay. Okay, and how detailed is Grant's descriptions for some of this new material?
It depends. Some it goes from pretty ambiguous to very, very specific, and so it's just a he's a pretty good collaborator. So if he's got a specific idea in mind, he will certainly let you know about it. Okay. If all he's got is just a general vibe, then he's kind enough to trust the artist to. Really go for it. I mean, rather than him getting into specifics that he's not really feeling the vibe on or whatever, he'll just say, yeah, figure it out. You know?
Fair enough.
It's theoretically my job to be able to figure it out, so I appreciate that.
That's excellent, man. Now, this is, like I said, I think the passage that you did in Batman and Robin was cool enough, and we were all screaming yay locally and stuff and saying nice going. But no, this is such a great book, and I'm really pleased. And it seems, and this is, of course, Batman Incorporated number 4, it seems like, you know, are they double shipping to kind of get it back on track or whatever? Is that what's going on?
I don't know specifically what they're doing. They definitely, I mean, 4 came right after 3. I think
right.
It came 2 weeks after 3. And then number 5, which... but by the time this goes up, it'll be in the bag. So 5 comes out. I think it was supposed to come out 2 weeks later, but now it's coming out 3 weeks later. So it's definitely they're picking up the pace to try and get it, you know, back on track.
Sure.
I don't know if we'll ever make up, you know, for all the lost time, but it's definitely on a pretty reasonable schedule these days.
And is each Batman book kind of its own world now? I mean, do you have to worry about any tie-ins to anything else?
I do. I don't know how. I will say that one of the I had to design a character earlier than I thought I would have, so that character could be used in another Bat book. So there is some amount of coordination, but for the most part, I think the books are left to their own, you know, specific devices, and I think it works better because of that. I mean, the Batman Incorporated is a big, you know, globe-spanning, insane adventure, but the other, you know, Batman and Detective and Batman and Robin have a pretty narrow, you know, Gotham-y focus.
Will we see any other recognizable, well-established DC heroes so far in your run? And again, euphemistically, I don't expect...
You mean like Green Lantern sort of thing?
Right, exactly.
I imagine... That will happen eventually, but as far as I know, that is not on the immediate horizon.
Gotcha. Okay. I love this whole story. I think it's a really interesting story of Batman going around the world and kind of picking up his agents. And it's something that I picked up in issue 3, Yannick's last issue, that obviously this is all being done for a very specific reason in war, beyond the press conference announcement that Bruce made. About Batman Incorporated and everything, and it's interesting and it'll be fun. And obviously, best laid plans are usually ones that don't happen the way you want them to.
Right.
So yeah, I look forward to following Grant's plan here and seeing where all of this kind of ends up. And also, God, I love these heroes. I love these agents. I think the Gaucho's a cool character. I thought the Japanese character was really interesting. And I remember reading, even well before the J.H. Williams collaboration during the regular Batman run of the Club of Heroes, those original 50 stories in reprints, and hearing about the Ranger and the Legionnaire and the Musketeer and all of these, international Batman. So it is the great joy of Grant's run is watching him acknowledge all of these old stories and saying, no, all this did happen to the current Batman. They aren't Earth 2 stories. They're not another guy. This is all the same guy from Detective 27, which is really neat.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Was there a question?
Well, no, I was wondering, what do you think of this?
I love it. I love getting to draw all these guys and seeing, how Batman, has a different, different interaction with each of them. And it's kind of like Doc Savage in a way that Doc respects all of his compatriots, but he's also, better than they are at everything.
I'm with you. Yeah, no, that's a good comparison, actually. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think since coming from his near-death time-traveling experience, he is much more willing to obviously work as in a team setting and is also enjoying life a little bit better than the grim guy that we've been kind of left with for so many years. So that's kind of neat, too. This is great, man. Yeah. Nice going. This is, I'm really happy that, Grant took notice of you from your Casey work. And, I mean, honestly, let's, go back and talk about some of the older stuff. I think back to when you did sequences in Elephant Men for Richard Starkings. I thought that stuff was really neat. Where would you say that your first kind of the level of, say, Elephant Men, and I don't mean that in any, I don't mean for Richard's stuff to take a back seat, because I think artistically, Richard's always had a wonderful eye for books like Elephant Men. Joe Casey's always had a wonderful eye for great artists and stuff. So where would you say your first break around that kind of Starking Casey material began?
It definitely was that Elephant Man issue. Before that, I was still doing a kind of a David Lloyd, John Paul Leone, Milton Caniff sort of style. Lots of heavy brushwork and shadows, and leaving a lot of line work open. And I was doing that right up until Elephant Man, and I saw an interview with Richard about Elephant Man, and I'd been picking up the big hit Flask issues, and I met Richard at a convention and gave him a copy of this little ash can I'd put out called Valentine, and he really liked it, and I just remembered that he really liked it. And years later, I read this Elephant Man issue, and he said that he was doing backup stories. So out of the blue, I just emailed him. I was like, hey, remember me? I did this thing you liked. I want to do one of these backup stories. And he said, sure. And so in the process of drawing it, I decided that the Milton Caniff sort of thing that I was doing, I didn't think it was appropriate, since Elephant Man has kind of a Blade Runner Mobius sort of feel. So I just went for it. I was like, I think I can do drawn style with some Caniffy shadows, and I just went for it, and it turned out pretty well. And then like the second I finished that, Joe Casey called about Nixon's Pals, and I was off and running. So it was basically just the, Elephant Man made me decide to start drawing in this, more detailed, less shadowy style.
Who was that? What was the name of that Hitman character in Elephant Man that you your backup?
The Silencer.
The Silencer. Yes, very cool character. Interesting.
Yeah, Elephant Man number 9, it's kind of funny because I drew my story, I would say months before the first issue of Elephant Men came out, and then just knowing that I had to wait until issue 9 for the story to appear. So I feel like I was well into Nixon's Pals by the time that Elephant Men story finally came out.
Interesting. And it's fun to look at the difference, too, of those two Casey books you worked on at Image, Nixon's Pals and Officer Down, because, again, there's a big leap, I think, in your art from those two books.
Yeah.
And, I love Nixon's Pals. That's fantastic. Is it still available through Diamond?
I don't know. There are not too many copies left. I mean, it's definitely, it's not fully sold out. So, So the listeners at home can try ordering it through their store or maybe through Amazon, because I believe Amazon's got its own warehouse. So maybe maybe they're all tied up at Amazon.
Okay.
But there should be some available, and it's also available on. It's Iverse. You have to look for it very specifically. The search functionality is a little screwed up, but if you look at publishers and then click on image and then scroll down straight to N for Nixon Files, you can buy it. And I think it's $5 for a 96 page or whatever graphic novel. Seems like a pretty good value.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good price. That's all right. Very cool. That's excellent. Now, how did you and Casey hook up?
At the time, Richard was lettering Godland.
Mm-hmm.
So he and Joe, and also Joe was writing the Hit Flask book. So Richard and Joe were pretty good buddies. And I guess Richard sent my pages over to Joe, and Joe was like, Joe wanted to snatch me up before anyone else did.
That's great, man. Between you and Tom Scioli on Godland, I always think – Joe always does have a good eye for new artists and stuff. All those Men of Action guys, great writers, and they always seem to find these interesting artists that have a unique style and haven't really kind of, hit the atmosphere yet. And I think, obviously you were like that with Nixon's Pals. Now, I know, and we've already mentioned that you read in my Word Balloon magazine the Darrow interview that I had and stuff, and I know that you've become a real Jeff Darrow fan, and I know that, His stuff has influenced your style. It seems like you pulled back a little bit. I still see some of that in this Batman Incorporated stuff. But where would you say that Darrow influence is currently in your stuff?
The hugest way he influenced my style was him saying that it was all right to use microns. With microns for the layman is an artist marker. Like before that, I was using a dip pen or a brush for everything.
Okay.
But once I found out that Darrow was using microns, which, I don't know, among like artists, people that use microns kind of get they're kind of looked down on because it's kind of a shitty tool, I guess.
Well, is it like a real fine-tipped marker of some sort, basically, or?
Yeah, it's a real fine-tipped marker, and it does use real ink, but, I don't know, you don't have the full control, and there's a, you have to buy like seven different ones to get the full range of width. So, you get a 001 is really tiny, and then it goes up to an 08 is pretty fat.
Interesting. Like okay.
But before I heard Darrow use them, I always heard people busting microns balls. So I just never, I never tried to use them. But once I heard that a real artist, used these things and he wasn't executed for it.
Sure.
I started to use them, and now I use them pretty exclusively, and I always feel a little, I feel a little like a fraud for doing so, but, it seems to work pretty well, so what are you going to do?
No, the stuff looks great, and, who cares what the tools are as long as the end result is good. Who cares?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very cool. I did not know that. This is fantastic.
Yeah, but, obviously, Darrow's I like the open line stuff. I like lots of detail and splattering brains and lots of windows and stuff. So I'm definitely I don't know if I'm actively trying to draw less like him or if I'm just trying to really incorporate that stuff into my style rather than trying to ape it, I guess.
Now, we briefly mentioned the Amory Wars, and I, as I always point out to you, being the old man that I am, I always forget the name of the band that the Amory Wars is behind and everything. So, what is all this stuff out of?
The Amory Wars is the crazy comic book mythology by Claudio Sanchez, the frontman for Coheed and Cambria. And, that was this volume of Amory Wars, the third volume, which it's the most confusing thing. Technically, it's the third part of the story, but it's based on their second album. So depending on how you think about it, it's either the second volume or the third. It's really involved. It seems completely – it's designed to drive people away. Oh, shit, that sounds horrible. I don't know. It's pretty awesome.
But, yeah, I mean, no, it's got its following, obviously, and, I mean, I know it's, you know, kind of its own thing.
Yeah, it's very involved in a way that, I mean, at first, it's kind of alienating at first, but then it's so involved that it really sucks you in. You just have to, you know, find out more and more to try and understand it. So in a way, it's almost like a, you know, Grant Morrison comic that some people really hate it because it's confusing. But once once the confusion pulls you in, you are, you know, sucked in for the rest of your existence. So it's got that sort of weirdness to it, if that makes sense.
No. I he was at C2E2, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I met him. I met him at at the Hyatt Bar on either Friday or Saturday night, and it was so brief, or maybe even Sunday night. Was he with you that I met him? Did you introduce me to him?
I may have. I ran into him 4 or 5 times over the course of the con. I'm not sure.
But that's, and I'm, you know, again, such a knucklehead that I didn't even realize. I knew the name, but I couldn't, like, associate where I knew him from. I'm like, oh, hey, right. Nice meeting you and stuff. And I probably even said, like, a typical old man. I, like, look at him, like, hey, nice hair. And he laughed, and he was cool about it and everything, because he does. He's got awesome hair. I mean, that's fantastic hair, man. So, and I meant it. I'm like, hey, man, you got awesome hair. You got very cool hair. And we moved on, and I'm like, yeah, it didn't even occur to me that, okay, I know he's either a writer or an artist, or who is he, and what does he do? And I'm like, idiot. Now that I think about it, yeah, definitely. Of course, right. It's Amory Wars. Shame on me. And I didn't even, like, take the moment beyond, hey, nice to meet you, to really go further. So, Claudio, if you're listening, I apologize. And I owe you one. And we'll make good on that. But, I just have loved your adventures at conventions since taking over Amory Wars. I think you've had an interesting cross-section of fans approach you about the books. You were like a tween darling for a while, weren't you?
I did a couple signings with them at San Diego, and I've never been a part of anything like that. I mean, a line, 100 people deep, and people – literally crying to meet Claudio. And, I mean, they had no clue who I was, which is fine. But I was along for the ride. But, I mean, these people were freaking out. It was like to the fans of Coheed and Cambria, they are like the Beatles.
Sure.
Yeah, it was wild. It was wild just to see. Claudio's such a casual dude that he's really cool about it. Like, he's the most down-to-earth rock star I could imagine.
I can appreciate that because that's what it seemed like when I was meeting him, too. He was just a very mellow dude. And I'm like, oh, hey, man. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Good luck at Keiko's. I'll see you later. I had no idea who I was talking to. And that's awesome. Good for him. No, that's cool. Now, what's it been like? This was your first convention, obviously, C2E2, being part of the Bat Office. Tell me about the panels. How did it go?
It was awesome. I've never been on a panel that big before, so I mean it wasn't Hall H at San Diego or anything, but it's the size of a movie theater or something. It was really neat. Everyone applauded when they announced I was exclusive, and since I was the only Bat guy on the panel, I got to answer all the Bat questions. It was neat. I felt like I was legitimate. I met Kevin Maguire. That was pretty awesome.
Awesome. I saw him at the show. Yeah, that's very cool. Now, was this a DC Nation or a DC Universe panel?
It was one of those.
Was Dan running things to deal?
It was not Dan. It was Eddie and Bob Wayne, I guess.
Oh, cool. Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
They're big shooters, absolutely. Bob, obviously, and Eddie. That's really neat. This is cool. No, I'm looking forward to hearing about you on the road because, yeah, now, you know, C2E2 is a nice size show. And I mean, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit. But I think, obviously, as you say, it'll be fun come San Diego when you are in the big hall and it's you're there with everybody, including Grant. Have you had the opportunity yet? I mean, we were all at San Diego last year. Have you met Grant yet?
I've never met him. I've gotten one email from him. he refers to me in his scripts. You know, he'll say, Chris, what I'd like here, great working with you again, Chris, but that's all the direct interaction I get with him.
Actually, sure.
He doesn't check his email, I guess. his wife, Kristen, is actually my contact. So I email Kristen a lot, and then she probably just leans over, asks Grant the question, and types me the answer back.
That's all right. But no, well, I guarantee you it'll probably happen in San Diego. I'm sure Grant will be in San Diego.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
What other conventions have you got coming up this season?
Definitely doing San Diego, the Wizard Show in August. It's my first big show that I'm a guest at. That's pretty exciting.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing the Mid-Ohio Show in August? No, October.
Okay.
Thinking about doing that. I think that's about it.
Yeah, no New York?
Oh, I'm doing a Kankakee library show at the beginning of June. Oh, I am probably going to do New York, yeah.
Okay, you know, you mentioned that Kankakee show. I expect to be there as well, and it's a really good thing for people in the south suburb Chicago area. It's a really nice thing that Laura Gentile of Moonstone Books has put together with the Kankakee Library. And, you know, I'm kind of, like, sensitive to those things and want to encourage those things because I really think with digital books right now, I think a lot of taxpayers and people in general are looking at libraries and saying, well, what are they for now if we're getting our books digitally? And I think the libraries properly are responding with events like this comic thing that Laurie and the library have put together. And I do think that libraries are still very useful. So I'm full on board on any library stuff. When people ask me to do anything like that, I definitely want to be a part of it. So it's nice. And really a lot of because as you know, Chicago is such a great artistic community. There's a lot of great people that are going to go out to that. I know Norton's going to go, Seeley, Don Kramer's going to be there. You probably know some more artists than the ones I'm rattling off, including yourself, that are going to be there.
I think Tony's going to be there. I think Chris Mitten.
Oh, Tony Atkins, of course. And Chris Mitten, very cool, from Wasteland. Very nice. I think it's a really nice event. So, and in fact, even on our podcast panel, we had a couple librarians speak up and stuff and talk about, you know, just their what they try to do to keep comics, you know, going. And again, I think it's a great place for if you're worried about whether you want to read a book or not, you'd be surprised at the graphic novel section of most libraries these days. I think they're doing a really good job of kind of keeping things stocked, and they really want to be they want that audience to know that you can go to the library and check that stuff out, which is terrific. And also the diversity. I mean, they are not shy of getting the Nixon's Pals, the Officers Downs, you know, Elephant Men, all the interesting independent stuff, along with the mainstream of DC and Marvel. So, you know, by all means, if you don't do it already, support your library. It's a good thing. So that's very cool, man. And good. I'm glad you're coming to New York as well. That's a great show, obviously.
I love libraries. I was reading a couple books a week at the library back when I had the time and was working a day job. I was at the Soldier, library a couple times a week. Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, you know, and honestly, I think everyone, comic readers in general, I think when you get that post-college era of, you know, the first jobs that you get out of college, I mean, you're struggling and every penny counts, and certainly today's prices don't help. So you'd be shocked at, you know, you'll find what you're looking for at the library more times than not. And, they're really good about doing that. So, you know, continue to patronize the library. It's good.
Yeah, love it. And especially with you know, the Chicago library is all, you know, all linked up over the internet. I sound like such an old man. They're all linked up on this internet. But, you know, if the local branch doesn't have the book you want, you know, there's 30 other libraries in Chicago that might, and they'll, you know, ship it to your local one. You can read it, no problem. Everything's free. It's awesome. Well, I mean, I suppose it's, you know, I pay taxes, so I'm paying for it, you know.
But that's the thing, exactly. It really is a good, you know, community service, civic service, and you should absolutely take advantage of it. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And we're all readers. I mean, obviously, people who listen to this podcast, we're all readers. And, you know, for those of you who don't go to the library, honestly, you really owe it to yourself to go check it out. And also, if they don't have a big selection, it's kind of like a grocery store. Go tell them and say, hey, you know, talk to the librarian and say, you know, hey, it'd be great if you got more graphic novels and I might recommend these. Surprised. And I really think it's a good relationship that comic publishers have with libraries. And I think they most librarians, they do. They care. Anyway. Another project of yours that I really enjoyed in both print and also seeing the original art over at places like Challengers was you were involved with the Marvel 70th anniversary stuff, and you got to do a really cool book with a great writer. Go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, that was awesome. The the Marvel Mystery 70th anniversary. I guess that Marvel Mystery Comics 70th anniversary special. I think that's right.
Yep.
So Tom DeFalco, one of my favorite 80s writers, I guess. I got to work with him. We got to work Marvel style, which I don't get to do very often. Yeah, it was awesome. I got to draw Namor and the Human Torch fighting Nazi robots, and then I got to also draw a bunch of more obscure characters that I'd honestly never heard of before. The Ferret, the Angel, and Electro, I think. Electro, the Human Dynamo, something like that.
Is Electro the one with the robot that has the human kind of controlling the robot, like, they're kind of linked together?
The remote control, yeah.
Very cool. All those characters were in the Marvels project that Ed Brubaker wrote.
Mike, I didn't pick that one up. Was that a Steve Epting drawn one?
Yes, it was.
Why the hell didn't I buy that comic? I think it came out around the same time, and I think I was jealous. Like, it made me feel bad about myself just seeing Epting draw all those characters. Like, I can't own this.
Oh, that's hilarious.
In my house.
No, it was they were, and I think your stuff honestly came out first. But it was honestly, that series was a great miniseries, and I think just because there were too many other events going on, a lot of people, it didn't sell, I think, what Marvel wanted it to sell. And speaking with Brubaker about it too, that was the vibe that I got. And it's an excellent story, and I love that whole period, the golden age of Timely, because even more so than the DC stuff, it's kind of a blank slate. It really is this, like, the characters were there. They're all in these 8-page stories back to the original stuff. And if you really sit, although, of course, first meeting of the Torch, or the first big fight of the Torch and Namor was like a 64-page, like, ridiculous slugfest that they did all one story. But I really think there's a lot of back history that kind of is blank. And I was very pleased to see that Marvel has kind of started playing with the Golden Age a little bit more. It made sense to do it around the 70th anniversary, and things like Straczynski's The 12 and the Marvels Project and things like that. But it seems like they're continuing to move in those directions. I just heard Paul Jenkins is doing an all-winter story this summer.
Oh, cool.
So that should be fun. But I loved that whole 70th anniversary thing. They got so many great writers and artists to work on books. As you say, Tom DeFalco on your book. Jen Van Meter did a really cool Miss America. So many other ones. And, I just think all those designs of those Golden Age characters are really neat. And it's fun to see modern guys kind of, take a spin with them and everything. So,
All those real simple, first crack at drawing the superhero designs are really neat. Because everything else is based off of that, but you kind of get pinned into a corner with designs that you're not allowed to use because they've already been called or whatever before. So yeah, all those early designs have a raw, primalness. I don't know, they're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, very cool, man. So obviously, Batman Incorporated is obviously taking up a lot of your time now. I mean, that's the full-time gig.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, continued success with it. I think you're, it's a great start, man. Honestly, 4 was just a beautiful book. And I know that a lot of good reviews have come out about it and positive talk on podcasts. So congratulations on that, and keep it up. I'm sure we'll run into each other at our usual stomping grounds because Chicago is that kind of comics community. I just saw you Saturday night. Friday night we hung out at Challengers. They had a nice little art show for Becky Cloonan.
Oh, man, how about that art, huh?
She's amazing. She really is. That's the second time I had a chance to really spend any time talking to her, and I'll have her on a word balloon. But she's she's awesome. I mean, and I don't mean little in any pejorative way. She is.
She's about 2 feet tall.
She is about two feet tall, and she's this little dynamo. She's fantastic, an amazing artist, and so funny, and great ideas, and very excited about some of her projects coming up. So we'll definitely have her on a word balloon as well. Who else? I saw you hanging with the usual crowd. Tony was there. Tony Akins, Jill Thompson, mm-hmm. Norton and Seeley were there, I think, before you showed up. But I know you hang with them and get to see them on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. I think that was another fun thing about C2E2 was seeing the out-of-towners realize in the last two conventions how big the Chicago local community is. as far as comic art and stuff. And I think it's great. It's fun to be together with everybody and hang out. And it's great that everyone gets along. And, you know, it's something to do when we're not stuck in the house, right?
Right.
Anything we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
We didn't even get to talk about Richard Stark. I thought we were going to talk about Richard Stark books.
Oh, did you want to talk about Richard Stark books?
Oh, I don't know. I could go for 5 minutes on Richard Stark.
About Darwin Cook and everything? We can talk about that. I'm still rolling.
Oh, no, I was talking about, actually, you always talk about the crime books. I've got a theory about Richard Stark that I've not heard anyone else talk about.
I would love to hear it. I'm a huge fan of Donald Westlake's books, and I've loved what Darwin Cook has been doing, adapting them. But all right, you're a big reader of the Stark books. Talk to me.
Yeah, I've plowed through the first 5 Dortmunder books and, you know, maybe 10 or 15 of the Parker books.
Okay.
Here's my theory. So as any true Parker fan knows, he took like a 15-year break from the Parker books. And I think I figured out why. If you read, there's a Dortmunder book called, I believe it's called Jimmy the Kid.
Okay.
And in the book, Dortmunder is reading a Parker book. And he decides to take, and it's like a kidnapping story. So he decides to take this story and use it as the blueprint for his own kidnapping caper.
I know what you mean. Go on.
Yeah. And so, as he's trying to follow the, you know, Parker's elaborate scheme, he keeps screwing it. Dortmunder keeps screwing it up at every turn. And once you have that wry, you know, sort of sarcastic vision of a Parker book, it's impossible to take it seriously. And I feel like Westlake, as he was writing this, came to the conclusion that the Parker books were a sham.
That's very interesting.
And he couldn't go back to it for 15 years. Because once you have this Dortmunder vision of, you know, all these, you know, complicated schemes, and they all fall apart just because people are stupid and don't really understand the shorthand that clues that they're trying to drop. It just makes the Parker books seem completely implausible and fantastical.
That's very funny.
I'm pretty sure that's why he couldn't bring himself to write another for 15 or 20 years.
That's very interesting, man. You're going to have to like approach Darwin Cook and ask him that question. Because I think that's a very – and I mean, honestly, certainly in comic circles, I think he's the guy to ask that question, because it seems to me that he really gets what he was trying to do in the Parker books. I'd really like to hear that conversation. That's very interesting. Or even Rucka. I've got to introduce you to Rucka and have you kind of blow Rucka's mind with that, or Brubaker too, for that matter. Very interesting.
I've never met any of those guys.
They're good men. They're all big crime fans. They're, the guys I lean on for all that stuff. Would you ever want to that's something that would be interesting to see you do, is really get painterly and maybe do like a hard case crime cover or something like that, the way Sean Phillips has seemed to have been able to get into that world?
That would be awesome. I mean, that's one of those things that I basically, like, I took some acrylic classes in college, but I've never used oils ever, like not a single time. So I don't know if I could do it, but it would be awesome to try. I monkey around with watercolors once in a while, and I do pretty good marker sketches at conventions. So I'm slowly developing, you know, a halfway decent color sense. But yeah, I would love to try that.
Do you ever pour over those old kind of paperback covers of like the crime novels in the way that they do noir paperbacks and stuff?
I love that stuff. I'm not sure how to, you know, really incorporate it into the current style I've got, but, you know, I like looking at them, and I like the ridiculous color schemes a lot of them have, and the use of, the use of negative space, you know, how they leave, you know, just the right amount of room for the title. That's something I'm really starting to really play, pay attention to in comics. I'm really starting to notice how comics read so much better when there really is comfortable room for word balloons and titles and stuff.
Sure. No, that's very cool. I always try to talk to guys like Gabe Hardman and even Brubaker, being a writer, although he's, you know, done his own drawing as well. He just sent me in advance all the cover art for the next Criminal, or at least the promotional piece they're using for the next Criminal arc. and I'm sure it will be like the first cover of the first book and everything. And yeah, you know, at first I thought it was, you know, a combination of Sean and Val Staples, because Val obviously colors the interiors and stuff. And in this case, no, Bruce's like, no, when it comes to covers, that's all Sean. And it's really fun to see. And I think of artists like Robert McKinnon and some of these other great old paperback cover artists. And I believe McKinnon. I always forget if McKinnon was the guy who did the stuff that in the James Bond Thunderball, all the painted movie posters and the soundtrack that has great kind of paperback looking covers and stuff. You know, just beautiful stuff like that. And as you say, yeah, a lot of good use of negative space. Neat stuff.
Yeah, love that stuff. I don't know nearly enough about it. So whenever I get involved in a conversation with that, I basically just end up nodding and smiling because I don't know who anyone's nickname is.
Well, you know, I mentioned this to another podcaster, Chris Smits. In a couple weeks, if you have the time, you should go to the Windy City Pulp and Paper Show. I don't have the date handy, but I know it's in mid-April. I want to say either the tax weekend or the weekend after. And it's at one of the, you know, hotels right off of 294. It's one of the Chicago suburban hotels. But it's great. Nice. And I'll tell you, man, Steranko used to come every year. I haven't seen him in the last couple. But Jerry Conway still comes every year. And
really?
Yep, and the Giannis are always there. Tom and Gary are always there. A lot of the old guard shows up because it really is, you know, it's more of a flea market kind of traditional trade show. Mm-hmm. Where it, you know, I mean, it really is just in like one or two hotel ballrooms that they kind of connect and everything. But they have they have wonderful old covers going back to the 30s, original painted covers, and tons of really great original stuff and reprint stuff, and dozens of, or actually hundreds of DVDs of like old movies and things. It's really a great show. It really is.
I haven't been to one of those hotel shows in a while. I went to those, you know, comic conventions growing up. I really have a soft spot for those.
Awesome, man. Well, maybe you'll come. Maybe we'll do that.
Let's do it. Road trip. Oh, Officer Down is available on Comixology now. That's pretty cool.
And how much is that going for?
I believe it is $2.99. Someone told me it was $2, so over the whole con, I was telling everyone it was $2, but apparently that was a lie.
Okay, but that's awesome. That's great. So Iverse has Nixon's Pals, and Comixology has Officer Down. Mm-hmm. Is the Elephant Man stuff, is that available digitally?
It is.
Excellent.
Yeah, but don't waste your money on that because I don't see a dime.
Aw.
I'm kidding.
We like Richard. Uncle it's Rich. All right.
Uncle Rich, I'm kidding.
No, that's awesome, man. I'm glad that your stuff is out there digitally, and it'll be interesting to see. Gee, I wonder if they'd be able to do a Kindle version of your stuff because all that was black and white. Like Nixon's Pals was black and white.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's a fair amount of grayscale. I don't really have too much experience with a Kindle. The only time I ever was shown one, it broke in my hands when I turned it on.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, so I don't know if that can really handle grayscale or if it's just, you know, a bitmap black or white image. I don't know about that.
All right. Excellent. We'll look for Chris Burnham's stuff digitally and on the racks because Batman Incorporated is up and running in the hands of Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham. So thank you for your time today, sir.
Hey, my pleasure, buddy.
That's Chris Berman. Keep following his run on Batman Incorporated. It's one of the more distinctive books from DC Comics these days. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening. And don't forget, if you want to contact Word Balloon, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com, or via Facebook message. Follow me at Twitter under John Word Balloon. Under Facebook, it's John Sutcher. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.